With LinkedIn Jobs, we tap into a network of more than a billion professionals to help you find quality professionals quickly and easily for any role you need. Marketing wizards? Found them.
Software engineers?
Found.
That project manager I could never seem to hire?
And found. LinkedIn Jobs quickly matches your roles with candidates with the right skills and experience. In fact, 86% of small businesses get a qualified candidate within 24 hours. Post your first job for free and get started at linkedin.com/decide. That's linkedin.com/decide. Terms and conditions apply.
Beat me up on the mamas of all mama shit.
Hey, I'm looking through my telescope and I see a mothership. Is that you? Beam me up.
Hey, DA, I'm thirsty, man. Could you beam me up for a cold one?
Hey, DA, what's going on, baby? Stop me off and beam me up.
DA, what's the dealio? Permission to get in that mothership.
Is my window seat still available? Beam me up.
What's going on, DA? Hey, man, I need you to do me a huge favor. My coworker's a jerk. Oh, just beam me up, man.
Get beamed up. Everyone else has. It's DA on CBS Sports Radio.
And we come to you live from the Quicken Loan Studios. National mortgage lender Quicken Loans. Apply simply, understand fully, mortgage confidently. Coming up this hour on the show, the Giants look like doggy doo-doo. So Mraz believes the season is over. We'll get his thoughts on whether this thing is the end of Big Blue's season before it even really gets started. 0-2 now. Also, later on in this hour, let's talk about LSU. Because how about that? The Tigers are a top 10 team. They're getting a huge road win on the Plains. Also, we'll hear from Clay Matthews on that questionable flag. And Ryan Fitzpatrick living his best life. All this morning and this hour on the show. All of that plus so much more. You got thoughts on Vontae Davis abruptly retiring middle of the game. The Jaguars pounding the Patriots. Let's talk about it. Hit me up at 855-212-4CBS. 855-212-4227. Twitter, DA on CBS. We'll also update you on the Battle of the Bulge standings after week two of the picks coming up later on in the hour. Yesterday, the Kansas City Chiefs move to 2-0.
Hunt, single setback. Sidecar position left. They motion Sammy Watkins, who's been the story of this first quarter. Flanker left. Hill right along with Conley. He's already got a touchdown. Mahomes takes it, dumps it to Hunt. Near side at the five, trying to drag a defender into the end zone. He's got a touchdown! Kansas City!
You never expected to have 10 touchdowns at this point in the season, but I knew with this offense and the weapons that we had and the scheme Coach Reed's drawing up that we had a chance to be really, really good and that the possibilities are, they're endless.
Mitch Holt is the voice of the Chiefs on the Chiefs Radio Network. And then Patrick Holmes. Mahomes sounds like a character in SpongeBob SquarePants. I want more Mahomes. I want all Mahomes all the time. He doesn't sound like anybody else in the NFL. He should do voiceover work for Nick Jr. Everything he says is just funny and weird. The Chiefs have had good teams under Andy Reid. They've had playoff teams under Andy Reid. They've had 5-0 teams. They've had 12-4 teams. They've had a bye under Andy Reid in the playoffs. Andy Reid has had solid football teams in Kansas City. And all of them had wrinkles in their offense, which at times could make them the quirkiest, sometimes most fun offense in football. But they've never been the best offense in football. They've never been the scariest offense in football. The Pittsburgh Steelers, without Le'Veon Bell and right now 0-1-1, used to have the scariest offense in the NFL. And in Martavis Bryant, whoever the number two target was to Antonio Brown, the New England Patriots have had scary offenses in the past, although really not as explosive as the ones we're talking about right now, maybe since that 2007 season with Moss and Welker at the height of their careers. Early on, Gronk and Hernandez, that combination was very explosive. But with all of the targets that are lacking right now for Tom Brady, look at what Jalen Ramsey and the Jaguars did to Gronk yesterday. 2 catches for 15 yards. That's not the scariest offense in football. Aaron Rodgers is brilliant, but the scariest offense in football belongs in Kansas City. And for all of the years of the Chiefs, all of the years ever since Len Dawson, so we're talking about maybe 40 years, the Kansas City Chiefs have had somebody else's quarterback, and somebody else didn't want him. That's just the truth. Whoever their quarterback wasn't their first choice because somebody had to give up that guy. It was Steve DeBerg, Joe Montana, Elvis Gerbach, Steve Bono, Trent Green, Matt Cassel, Alex Smith. All of those guys had to be given up on by their previous team. There was a reason they were available to the Kansas City Chiefs. Mahomes is different. Mahomes was the Chiefs' choice. And the fact that he is playing like this, more touchdown passes than any quarterback ever in 2 weeks, 10, shouldn't be this easy. And let me also tell you this, and let me sound the foghorn for Pete Prisco and company. That say if a guy's got it, a guy's got it. Start him week one of his rookie season. And if he perishes, he perishes. Drag his carcass off the side of the road and get the next guy. I love Prisco, but he and I differ on this point. Patrick Mahomes said after yesterday's game, sitting my rookie season helped me. He said sitting and watching and learning has me where I am today. Maybe if Mahomes went 6-10 last year as a rookie, he comes out year two looking great like this. But I doubt it. I think being able to absorb the information and watch and learn and be mentored and be tutored instead of having to go out there week one, rookie season, everything happening fast, and then your confidence is not so good, and then all these teams know your tendencies right away, and things start sinking on you, sitting and watching for a year is a benefit, and I think it is one of the biggest reasons Mahomes looks this good this early. There's going to be more film on him. There's going to be more tape on him. They're going to understand tendencies on him, and so it won't look this easy later on in the season. But with his howitzer of an arm and all the weapons that they have and Andy Reid's play calling, the Chiefs are the scariest offense in football. Their defenses are very good. They right now are the scariest offense in football. Rams are very good. Steelers should be better. Patriots should get better in Amendola, or I should say Edelman comes back. But ultimately, the best offense in football right now is in Kansas City. And Patrick Mahomes might be the only guy in the league that can overcome Andy Reid's problems in the playoffs. Andy Reid becomes overly conservative, good defenses, good schemes, good coaching, always upends him when it matters most in January. Maybe Mahomes is the one guy that overcomes that because you simply can't rein him in. His arm strength is too great. And when you have Tyreek Hill and Kareem Hunt and Travis Kelce, and the weapons they have, and the howitzer, a ball cannon of an arm on Patrick Mahomes. I don't know. That's hard to figure out a way to stop. It's not going to look that easy. Six touchdowns, though. He had five incompletions and six touchdowns. More touchdowns thrown than balls that hit the ground. 855-212-4CBS is the phone number. 855-212-4227. Hit us on Twitter as well, DA on CBS. I hate what has happened to Josh Gordon because Josh Gordon in some ways a bit of a trailblazer. A guy who clearly has had a ton of problems, personal life, addiction, alcohol abuse, substance abuse, and that has almost pushed him to the fringes of his career. It has. It has almost pushed him out of the NFL. But because of more of an awareness of mental illness, which I'm thankful that we as a society and we as a sports culture understand more and more, there has been more and more understanding of Josh Gordon, his plight, his plague, his problems, give him space, and ultimately allow him to develop through this and evolve through this and mature through this. And I wanted to see this have a solid ending because I wanted people in the NFL and I wanted people that watch the NFL, media and fans alike, to understand somebody who deals with mental illness at the beginning of their career should not be tossed out, that they are not of value. That we should all understand that there is a need to help people and understand why people are thinking or going through or doing the things that they're doing, if it's self-destructive. But what happens over the weekend is Josh Gordon arrives at the facility, quote-unquote, tardy, Saturday morning, says he's got a hamstring pull, even though he has fully practiced all week long and never complained about an injury. And the Browns basically announce he's not going to play on Sunday. Hugh Jackson has to tell the team he's not going to play on Sunday. He's got to address this before the game. And now the Browns are shopping him. We're going to release him sometime today. So what happens? This can't be that they stood by Josh Gordon through suspension, and being away from the facility and away from football and getting your mind right. They can't then cut bait with this guy the moment he's got a hamstring pull. That can't be it. It's because he's late to the facility. Maybe there was a zero tolerance. Maybe. I have a hard time believing that as well. You stand by him for this long that he's late to a Saturday practice or a Saturday meeting, rather. This bothers me. This annoys me. Maybe annoy is not the best word because that means I blame Josh Gordon. This is tough to watch go down because what you see from the reports are people not wanting to report what happened. You see speculation from the writers, speculation from the people around this. Perhaps it was connected to his previous problems. Possibility that maybe something happened akin to his previous suspension. Reading between the lines, sounds like Josh Gordon showed up Saturday morning, intoxicated, high, whatever it was, not in his right mind. And the Browns and the reporters and the media do not want to put that out there because of the sensitivity surrounding his mental illness and because of his alcohol dependency or chemical dependency. I just don't think he shows up with a hamstring strain and they go, okay, after all of that, you're cut. Or you're traded. I think they gave him zero tolerance on the chemical dependency part, and he screwed up. And they said, that's it. We can't have this happen yet again. And that's tough to watch because now it's just going to look like these guys are unsavable, unsalvageable. Another team might trade for him. But the Browns had gone the farthest with giving a player like that space to find himself and to get his head on. And it seems like he screwed up yet again. And now it's no coming back from that for him, at least for the Browns. And I'll be frank, I don't blame the Browns at all. I don't blame the Browns because they have stood by him a long time, hoping that the talent overcomes what his personal demons are. But when you're the Browns and you're just trying to win a football game and you're this close to winning every week and something is screwing up, to not be able to know whether to count on one of your best players to show up sober or to show up at practice or to be available or what's going to happen, it's a bridge too far. You can't have it. And it detracts from your focus every week. So I don't blame them. It's just tough to watch because it went this far. I mean, he got so many chances there. And I just think that the media is not really reporting, and maybe the story will come out, what really happened Saturday morning. It's not just a hamstring tear. 855-212-4CBS, 855-212-4227 on that and all the rest of the topics we've been talking about in the NFL and college football today. We'll jump into your phone calls coming up here next, and sounds like Mraz is oozing with venom and poison for his New York Giants after yesterday. We'll do that as well. DA, CBS Sports Radio.
Welcome to Play It, a new podcast network featuring radio and TV personalities talking business, sports, tech, entertainment, and more. Play it at play.it.
It's the DA Show only on CBS Sports Radio.
In an I formation, and they'll play fake to Elliott. Time deep. There's a shot and a man. And the 30, the 25, the 20, the 5. A right turn for Austin. Tavon Austin. Touchdown, Cowboys. 64 yards for number 10.
You know, just had too many negative plays. You know, when we get something going, all of a sudden, we'd... have a sack or something, negative. We're just going to get, get down in distance, get a good rhythm, and we just kept, going backwards at some critical moments that hurt us from, sustaining drives and staying a good down distance.
Brad Sham on Cowboys Radio, Eli Manning after a disgusting effort by the New York Giants, and they are a tough look at 0-2 right now. That offense has been brutal through 2 weeks. Welcome back, DA, with you here on CBS Sports Radio. I can't tell if Mraz is sad or mad today, so I want to get his thoughts on the Giants coming up here shortly. But first, in our toll-free line, brought to you by Geico. Great news, quick way you could save money switching to Geico. Go to geico.com. 15 minutes, you could save 15% or more on car insurance. TJ's in Melbourne, Florida, listing on 1560 there. What's going on, TJ?
Morning, DA. Can you beam me up, please?
You got it, brother. What's up?
Thank you, sir. First of all, I hope the reception went well this weekend.
It was
great.
Second of all, thank you.
The Jags, man, they looked lights out. I'm a huge Patriots fan. I can't say anything bad about them. I kept waiting for Bortles to Bortle, but he just didn't do it. He looked like Tom Brady. But Patriots fans this morning are freaking out, and we need to slow the roll. We just need to realize that the past 3 years we've won Super Bowls. We've lost one of the first two games of the season. There's no panic in Foxborough. We'll be okay. But as for yesterday, the Jags look like the best team in the NFL.
Yeah, I agree with all of that, TJ. I mean, I think that the Patriots still end up as a 12-4 type of team. I just don't think that they're going to lose this division, and my guess is they'll get a bye. But I'm not convinced they're an AFC Championship game team. I think two things have happened this year that give me pause on that. Number one, Patrick Mahomes looks this good this early. And we know the Chiefs have been contenders the last couple of years, but you knew that they would turtle in January. I think with Mahomes, it gives them the type of thing that always hurts the Pats. Downfield, aggressive playing, play calling, and passing. That's the type of thing. Look at what Nick Foles and the Eagles did last year. Look at what the Chiefs did to them in the early season kickoff opener. That type of player, Flacco did that to them a number of times. That type of aggressive play downfield can beat the Patriots, has. And then the other part is the Jaguars. The Jaguars are just a better football team than the Patriots right now. Now, I don't know about January. Who knows? But the Jaguars almost nipped them last year. This year more experience, year better. And at home, they were a far superior team yesterday. I'd feel differently if the Jaguars won in a late field goal. If you watch that game, Jacksonville owned them. They were just a better team from the time that game kicked off to the final. And I was the same way, waiting for Bortles to make a bad play, waiting for Hackett and the offense to get really conservative, waiting for a turnover and the Patriots go down the field and score. It never happened. Never. They were so good, and they executed so well. Right now, they're a better football team than the Patriots, and I think there's two better teams of the AFC right now than the Pats, the Chiefs and the Jags, and that makes me wonder if the Patriots can go right back to the AFC title game like we always expect. I don't think you should panic if you're a Pats fan. I don't think the Patriots will, because that's not what Belichick does. But the skill positions are lackluster for the Pats. The offensive line can be had. At some point, Brady can't look like an all-pro forever. And that secondary, that defense, has been lit up by Nick Foles and Blake Bortles. Lit up. Yesterday was just, last night, another god-awful performance by the Giants offense, which has become all too familiar over the last 5 years in New York Giants land. And when I came in today after a wonderful Saturday night wedding reception, Mraz there, the whole guy, all the guys of the crew here, which we'll delve into a little bit more tomorrow. I think we'll do some power rankings of the wedding event tomorrow, certainly the PGP. But I thought the Mraz would be happy-go-lucky, great time on Saturday. No. Head down, miserable. And I know it's the Giants affecting you. It was last night, so you're still feeling it. But I can't tell. Are you more sad and somber that you feel like the season's over, or mad at them?
It's honestly both. I'm beyond depressed, number one, that for the fifth time in 6 years, the team is 0-2. And now I know for sure, after watching last night, that for at least the second straight year, the Giants' season and anything to look forward to is over before I've even put the damn cover on the swimming pool.
What was last night? Why was that the eye-opening moment?
Because I truthfully felt the Cowboys stunk, and I still feel that way. And
you picked the Giants to win that game.
I did. And I thought for sure, even if the Giants were going to have a great year, that last night they would show you something. You know, the first week with the O-line excuse was, well, look at the Jaguars' defensive front. They're going to be able to pound them. Well, the Giants looked lost last night, like they're playing the 85 Bears, and Eli Manning, I don't care how bad the O-line is running 13 yards backward to get sacked, can't maneuver the pocket at all. We were sold all offseason on this damn Eli apology tour that John Mara put Dave Gettleman and Pat Shermer on, that, well, look at all the weapons. You watch what he does now. He invested in the O-line. And guess what? He still sucks. It's over. He's going to be 38 years old. And this is it. Now we're in no man's land. We could have at least had a young quarterback that they drafted at number two and a quarterback-rich draft class to look forward to and live with the losing. But instead, we drafted Saquon Barkley, who might be a Hall of Famer, might be a star, and you got Giant fans complaining he has no O-line to run behind. Well, what the heck did you expect when you took him? This is like buying a Ferrari when you can't afford the mortgage on your house. The stupidest offseason plan I've ever seen, and now they're 0-2. They're about to go to Houston to face a team who just lost to the Titans, who had neither offensive tackle and Blaine Gabbert starting, and the Giants are going to get their ass kicked to them. And then what's the excuse going to be? It's just, it's shot. It's shot. Eli Manning is the horse you take behind the barn and do you know what to it. Enough. What, have Kyle Loletta start by Thanksgiving? You had a chance to get Sam Darnold to Josh Rosen, and you spit the bit. So now this year's a wasted year. I'm sure next year's a wasted year. And whenever they decide to finally wake their ass up and draft a quarterback, that will be a wasted year because you got to give him a year to groom. So we're looking at a minimum 3 wasted years of me sitting on my fat ass watching a team go 3-13 year in, year out. When did the New York Giants become the Cleveland Browns, D.A.? I mean, how many Mondays are you going to walk in here and my sorry ass is sitting here, and for what? I'm missing out on valuable family time or doing something healthy with my life to sit on the couch. You know, my parents don't even have air conditioning. It's 95 degrees last night, and we can't move the ball. Got an all-world receiver. I'm checking down every down. You're down 3 scores, 4 minutes left. D.A., Pat Shermer's, you know, let the play clock tick down a last second. He's making Ben McAdoo look like Vince Lombardi. I can't take it anymore. I'm just done. It's depressing. It sucks. It sucks. It's over.
Eli's never-ending checkdowns last night was the truest sign his career is flickering. He has no confidence to go downfield, and he has one of the best wide receivers in football. How many passes did Saquon Barkley receive last night?
I think he had 18 catches for 16 yards or something like that. That's what it felt like.
I think he had 14 catches, 14 receptions. You should never check down 14. Times in a game.
And honestly, I'm tired of hearing the Eli defenders talk about the O-line. I know the O-line's bad. Maybe it's the worst O-line in football, but if you watch the NFL and not just the Giants, this is a league-wide epidemic. The offensive lines suck across the league, and Andy Dalton has Bobby Hart, who couldn't block me playing right tackle, 2 seconds to throw, and he's putting up 30 points on Thursday Night Football. We're managing a field goal before garbage time. At some point, you could change the GM, the coach, players on the offensive line, 4 new this year. What has the constant thread been for 6 years at garbage? Eli Manning. And I love him. I think he's going to Hall of Fame. It's it. It's shot. And the fact that John Mara failed to acknowledge that in the offseason, and I'm convinced, by the way, that they only hired Shermer and Gettleman because they were the only two idiots who took the job saying, yeah, we'll ride it out with Eli because of last year's backlash when they went to Geno Smith. Oh, Geno Smith would be a pleasant revolution on this team last night. At least he could escape something. I'm sorry. I love Eli. The time is come and gone. That's it. I'm tired of it. I'm just so tired of it. I'm tired of the excuses. It's depressing.
Mraz and I are in lockstep on this. I thought it was a huge franchise-altering mistake to take Saquon Barkley number 2 instead of taking a quarterback. And all along I said, Eli's game will not age well. He is immobile. His arm strength is deteriorating. When he does not have a solid offensive line, he becomes skittish, indecisive, and lacks confidence. And you can't fix that late in your career. That's only where those things get heightened. And so I said, you got to bet on Eli retiring earlier rather than later, or his stuff going earlier rather than later, because he will not have the extended career like Drew Brees or like Tom Brady. He doesn't get injured, but his game will not age well. It will not. And what we're seeing is he looks scared and timid and lost, and he can't make plays, and they are going to rue the day that they passed on potential franchise guys, especially if Sam Darnold is the real deal. Because if Sam Darnold's the real deal, and he's playing in your building, at your facility, every Sunday, and you are spinning your wheels like the Browns and the Bills and so many other organizations have done forever, it is going to be reminded to you every single day. And I wholeheartedly agree with Mraz and his assessment on Shurmur and Gettleman. Mara wanted to buy on Eli's career not being over because Mara doesn't have the stomach to go through 4-12s. He saw the backlash last year and was not ready to be irrelevant in this town. He was not ready for the fans not to show up. He wasn't ready for those luxury boxes not to be filled. He wasn't ready for that. And so he wanted to find guys that fit his vision for Eli. And so he found a GM to buy in on that, and the GM hired a coach that would buy in on that. It was the wrong plan. Eli is going to only look worse and worse and worse, and they will have drafted a running back to try to prop his career up like Bernie Lomax in Weekend at Bernie's, trying to make Eli look like a real live quarterback. Okay, let's fix the offensive line. Let's re-sign Odell. Let's draft Saquon Barkley, all to make Eli look better, when in reality, you can't put the lipstick on the pig. His effectiveness is just waning now. When we come back here on the show, we've got Clay Matthews weighing in on that ridiculous flag yesterday, which basically lost the Packers the game in many ways. Also, LSU zooming near the top of the AP poll. DA, CBS Sports Radio.
Hear the 12 DAs of Christmas as they happen.
You are also the person that is begging information from me every day about how the pasta bar is going to work.
Because I have a mental disability. I'm obsessed with food. I want Fra Diavolo to slap me in the face. I want sausage and broccoli to be slapping me in each cheek and go, ooh. Give me a damn gift I want to eat.
The DA Show on CBS Sports Radio.
41 minutes past the hour. Remember that you can always take us with you on the show. On the road, take the show with you on the go by downloading the CBS Sports app or the radio.com app or Apple Music. Listen to us wherever you are or watch us on the simulcast at watchda.com. That pasta bar was out there in full effect, Mraz. You did the world tour twice?
Yeah, I got up and I said, you know what, I'm going to go for a round twosies here.
There was a seafood Fra Diavolo that's a red sauce, spicy sauce. There was a mushroom cream sauce. And there was a broccoli Robin sausage, and it was kind of a made-to-order. And so you went up there. Is that six times you went up there?
Well, technically, I went with two plates, three pastas on each plate. I went to each chef. I said, we're going to do this on top of here. At some point, I think the second plate was all mixed together. I had three pastas combined into one. I even got salad for no reason. One of your buddies, I forgot who it was, looked over and goes, Mraz, what are you doing? This is just window dressing here. Why even bother?
Why bother with the salad?
Right, exactly.
So the Fra Diavolo slapped him in the face. And we'll do more in depth on the wedding event on tomorrow's show and the PGP this week. Senor Pantleg tweets, DA, as a lifetime Browns fan, I have to apologize to Mraz for their terrible draft. They should have taken Barkley first, forcing the Giants to take a quarterback, and Baker would have still fallen to the second pick. The Browns browned the draft, and now both teams are screwed. Well, that's interesting because I feel like right now Baker Mayfield looks like the right pick.
Baker Mayfield.
I don't think that Saquon would have been the right pick for them.
I would take Bradley.
I think taking Baker was the right play. Obviously, we haven't seen him play in a real football game, but early returns of the preseason were pretty positive. But it is true. Had Barkley gone off the board at one,
I would take Bradley.
The Giants would have been forced to take a quarterback. I don't know who they would have had. Probably, my guess is Darnold was who they would have had ranked the highest. And they wouldn't go down this path of having to try to harness the last gasp, the last flickering flame of Eli's career. But you know it's bad, Mraz, when Browns fans are apologizing to you.
We're in the same boat. We're lockstep, arm in arm.
Who would you rather have right now, next 5 years? The Browns roster or the Giants roster?
How can you not say the Browns roster? How can you not? I wouldn't want the Browns coaching staff, but the Browns roster of all these young players? Absolutely.
Yeah. Myles Garrett, Baker Mayfield.
And Baker Mayfield.
Jabril Peppers. Ward.
Good team. They're just a good team. Jarvis Landry got the juices loose.
Oh, no, they're good team.
No, but a good core. I honestly think if the Browns had, like, a coaching staff that didn't hate each other, maybe they would be, you know, 1-0-1 instead of 0-1-1.
Well, how about this? The Browns are a kicker away from being 2-0. They botched the win in Pittsburgh, or that was in Cleveland last week, because they had a game-winning field goal lined up, and they botched it. And yesterday, all the missed kicks by the Browns, they should have won that game in New Orleans.
Yeah, it's not like the wind was blowing in the Superdome to get Zane Gonzalez to hook that.
That's
What's
atrocious.
Wrong with the Saints, by the way?
What is wrong with the Saints? We'll talk more about them, but the Browns are a kicker away from being 2-0, which I can't even believe considering how bad I think Hugh Jackson is at his job, but they are a kicker away from being 2-0. Eric's next up in Abilene, Texas, listening to 98.1 to CBS Sports Radio. What's up, Eric?
How you doing?
Good, buddy. How you doing?
I'm doing okay. I was listening to Mraz's rant about the Giants, and I really believe that everything would have fallen into place quite well if they would have made a deal for Bridgewater.
Well, look, I think Teddy Bridgewater has more football left in his body than Eli Manning does. I'm not sure Teddy Bridgewater is any type of long-term solution for a New York Giants team over having drafted a franchise guy in a draft where there were multiple guys they could have taken a number two. See, here's the problem, is that the Giants never draft that high. And when you draft that high, you're not always convinced that there's a quarterback there that's worthy. In this draft, there's no way you'll ever get the combination of picking that high in a draft where there's multiple franchise quarterbacks in there. Is Bridgewater a better fit than Eli Manning? Perhaps, but I don't think you can really sell that to the team, to the fans, to the media. We're moving on from Eli Manning because of Teddy Bridgewater. I think you can if you draft the next guy and the next guy learns under Eli. But are the Giants, Mraz, much better if they brought in Teddy Bridgewater this year?
No, I also think that would just go against the whole point, like you were just brought up. If you were going to trade for Bridgewater in the offseason, then why didn't you spend the number two pick on a quarterback? I think the whole purpose was we're going with Eli, so there's no reason to bring in a Teddy Bridgewater.
But Bridgewater and Saquon Barkley, is that a better fit? Is that a better team?
I mean, I don't know. Bridgewater sitting behind, who knows how he would look like as a starter right now?
Fair.
Who knows?
Yeah, why doesn't he have a starting job anyway?
That just seems like you're creating a quarterback controversy for something you don't even know if he could survive the wherewithal. Who knows with that knee?
Let's get to the best audio of the day.
CBS presents this program in color.
An educated person can't think he's going to get a recruit by strippers coming in.
They can fire you, but they can't eat you.
And they run through our ass like through a tin horn, man, and we could not stop them.
The audio you need to hear. It's DA Soundcheck.
Last year was a disaster in the Bayou for Ed Orgeron in his first year at the helm of LSU. This year, completely different feel. LSU dismantled Miami and then went to Auburn and has one of the most impressive road victories of the college football season.
Give the credit to our players and our coaches and our leadership of our football team, the way they prepare, the way they believe in each other. They're a galvanized group right now. Obviously, a very happy football team. Just like any other week, we're 3-0. We're going to look at the film, enjoy tonight, protect the team, go back to work tomorrow.
Every time I hear Ed Orgeron speak, I think of the water boy. Every single time. It's just, I can't stop thinking about Bobby Boucher and Waterboy.
Obviously, a very happy football team, just like any other week.
But LSU has something they haven't had in years, which is a legit quarterback to go out there and actually challenge a defense. Joe Burrow is a better quarterback than they've had in a long time. Throws for 250 yards on only 15 completions, which means those are longer plays, chunk plays that LSU never used to get in the passing game. They're always going to have good running backs. They're always going to be able to pound you. They're always going to have great athletes on defense. But the quarterback position has been a hole. And right now it looks like maybe they fixed it. Plus, just the resiliency to go on the road to Auburn and drive when they needed to drive and make big plays when they needed to make big plays and kick a game-winning field goal as time expires. That is a gut-check moment. And for LSU to have that is incredible. And let me tell you, do I think they're as good as Alabama? I don't. But the SEC is better when Alabama's got to watch somebody behind their backs in the SEC West. And LSU, I thought it was going to be Auburn this year again. Wasn't. Apparently not now. It's LSU in the SEC West they got to look out for. And in the East, I mean, look at how good Georgia is. The SEC is better when it's not just Bama and a bunch of lesser programs. Georgia looks like real deal Holyfield, and LSU, that is as impressive of a win as you're going to get in the SEC. Clay Matthews is flagged for roughing the passer late in the game, yet again, second week in a row. Extend the drive of the opponent, which could have ended the game for the second week in a row. And Green Bay survived week one on Sunday night against the Bears. They did not yesterday against the Vikings. We had another tie.
I don't know what else to do. I mean, I don't know. You let me know. Let me tell me, did I put pressure on him? Because I thought I hit him within, his waist, the chest. I got my head across, put my hands down. And to call it, you know, at that point in the game, it's just, I mean, it's unbelievable.
It's giveth and taketh here. Because that rule is basically set up to save Aaron Rodgers and guys like Aaron Rodgers. The NFL doesn't want DeShone Kizer or Brett Hundley to be the Packers quarterback. They want Aaron Rodgers as the Packers quarterback. They do not want plays like last year. Rodgers get driven to the ground, guy falls on top of him, broken clavicle, out for most of the season. They don't want that. For Rodgers or their other premier, pristine, elite quarterbacks that sell tickets and sell interest. However, the flag on Clay Matthews was a disgrace. How else are football linebackers and defensive players supposed to take down a quarterback? He doesn't hit him low in the knee. He doesn't hit him high. He doesn't hit him with his helmet, and he barely lands on top of him. What is he supposed to do? At what point are you asking defensive football players to do something that is physically impossible? I guess they're saying that he picked up Cousins and drove him to the ground, but Cousins was jumping. Cousins was leaving his feet upon the hit. It wasn't Clay Matthews driving, pile driving him. It was Cousins was already going up in the air. There is a point where we are asking defensive players to not be humans anymore. These are split-second decisions. You're throwing your body around. You've got to think. You've got to react. You've got to go. And these are fractions of a second. And you're now asking defensive players to contort their body mid-air with a hit to fall away from the quarterback. At some point, it's just ridiculous. And I thought that flag was ridiculous. The one last week in the Bears game, that's a late hit. Fine. That's a stupid play from Clay Matthews. This one, what are we asking defensive players to do? Whose fault is that?
Whose fault is that?
And finally, Ryan Fitzpatrick living his best life. Another week, another win. And sorry, Jameis, you ain't getting your job back. DeSean Jackson had the wardrobe that Ryan Fitzpatrick wore after the game.
It's nothing. I mean, I think we just have to stay humble, you know. And we got to make sure we know how to handle success and all those things, so we can't change who we are.
How many carrots do you think are around your...
It's really heavy. Hey, DJ. I got like two more because DJ needs his stuff back.
Wait a minute, you mean
I borrowed your stuff. Sorry. Yeah, I borrowed your stuff. Sorry, DeShone.
What is yours? Is any of that yours or is that?
The chest hair is mine.
I'll be here all week. Don't forget to tip your waiters and waitresses. It's 2-for-1 specials at the bar right now. I mean, boy, that is a stand-up act from Ryan Fitzpatrick, which is kind of hysterical in so many ways because, number one, did you think you'd ever hear a Buccaneers beat reporter laugh this year? I mean, it was supposed to be walk the plank, pardon the pun, but walk the plank every week because the Bucks are going to be terrible. Number two, I mean, Ryan Fitzpatrick's real laffy right now. What happens after his six interception games? You know, whatever happens when he throws teams out of plays and gets paid all this money to just be a jamoke and a chump and get cut after the season because he's terrible. He's real laffy right now wearing DeSean Jackson's clothing. But there's a lot of really ugly, terrible moments from Ryan Fitzpatrick's career. But Mraz, it feels like you really didn't like the laughing in that.
It's just so, like, and Fitzpatrick, what, the going's good now? You've bounced around your whole career. You stink everywhere you go. You've never even made the playoffs. Two good games. All of a sudden, it's the chuckle hut now. I mean, I know, with the looking like Conor McGregor, we get it. You have a beard. You've done the beard thing for 10 years. Nobody gives a crap about the beard anymore that now you're turning into Conor McGregor. Take off the sunglasses and just go do your stupid interview. I don't need the cackle hut.
It is wild. It's two good games. He's had two really good games, and now he's dressing in DeSean Jackson's clothing with his chest hair out and his sunglasses on.
Get him out, bro.
Like he's doing stand-up. Two good games.
Get him out.
I've got a great Ryan Fitzpatrick Wheel of Destiny that I got to read to you coming up here next. Plus, in that regard, is Jameis ever getting his job back?
You could spend the weekend doing the same old whatever, or you could conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.